Hello and welcome to OU's Nach Yomi. You can find this year posted at ouradio.org/Nach or on my website, ericlevy.com, under the recording section.
Hi, this is Rabbi Eric Levy, and I am pleased to bring to you Psalm 45, Tehillim Mem Hei. This psalm is different from the psalms that we've seen before, and in fact, it's different than pretty much any other psalm, period. This is a royal wedding song, praising the groom as the greatest of rulers and blessing the bride-to-be who has been brought from another land to be his wife. The speaker of this psalm is a royal poet who first describes his efforts to make a worthy piece for the occasion, and then who actually writes the piece which accompanies the royal wedding ceremony and procession. Which king is being married here? Well, remember that the whole point of psalms is that the songs are generic enough to be used flexibly and repeatedly by and for different people. Nonetheless, as we will see, there's a lot here that reminds us of King Solomon, of Melech Shlomo, including similarities to the wording in Shir HaShirim, the Song of Songs. And with that similarity comes the realization that just as Shir HaShirim works on multiple levels, both in the plain sense and as a metaphor, most often understood as the historical relationship between God and his people, Psalm 45 may also be understood on multiple levels, or as the great commentator Rashi says in his introduction to the Song of Songs, Achat diber Elohim shtayim zu shamati, God says one thing and I can hear two things from it. Lamnatzeach al shoshanim livnei korach maskil shir yididot. For the maestro on shoshanim by the Korachites, a maskil, a song of love. Shoshanim, which literally means lilies, is probably some kind of six-stringed instrument. Shoshanim from the word shisha, six. Or perhaps it's a musical meter with six beats in every measure, like 6-4 time. 1-2-3-4-5-6. 1-2-3-4-5-6. Almost like a waltz, although a waltz is really 3-4. As I've mentioned, the exact meaning of maskil is hard to pin down, and this is in fact our third straight maskil. However, shir yedidut, or yedidot, is a clear definition of the content of the psalm. It is a love song, a wedding song. Note that the word Yedidot is close to the name given to Shlomo by King Solomon by Nathan the prophet, Yedidia, beloved of God. Rachash libi davar tov omer ani ma'asai lemelech lishoni eit sofer mahir. This verse is autobiographical. The psalmist is describing how his song came about. Worthy words stirred in my heart. I speak my composition to the king. My tongue is the pen of a quick or expert scribe. So we have here a song inside a psalm. The psalm describes the inspiration to write the wedding song. And then we have the actual wedding song itself. Since both the next line and the final line in the psalm end with the words Al Kain and Le'olam, it creates a literary envelope. So either they mark the start and end of the wedding song itself, or actually, I prefer that they are still essentially a description of how and why the author is inspired. And between this next verse and the final verse, we actually have the song itself. The first section is, this next verse is directed to the king and describes his physical and personal worthiness, worthiness that such a song should be sung about him. Yof yafita mi b'nei adam hutzak chem b'siftotecha. You are more beautiful than other men. Elegance has been poured for your lips. The image is that when God made the cast for this beautiful king, his lips were made with elegance, and as such, elegance and grace always flows from his lips. Al kein beirach Elohim la'olam. Now that doesn't mean that because of this beauty, God has blessed you, because God is the one who gave you the beauty, but it means because of this beauty, which is both physical as well as the words that flow out of your mouth, everyone can see that God has blessed you forever. And this is really a prelude to the song as a whole, as the royal poet tells the king why he is compelled to compose such a great wedding song. That is, if God blesses him forever, so the author must follow in kind. And as we will see, the last line of the psalm, which also seems to be the author's words, comes back to this point that really the author feels compelled to bless the king and his relationship forever and ever. And if this is correct, then the next line actually opens up the wedding song with a shout out directly to the king. Chagor charbacha al yarech, gibor hodecha v'haddarecha. Hero, gird your sword on your thigh. It is your majesty and your honor. Now, it is not clear if the sword is part of the wedding regalia strapped onto the king's thigh and therefore displays the honor, the majesty, the position of the king, or perhaps the sword is a metaphor that the honor and majesty of the king should be, the king should gird himself with his honor and his majesty, just as one might gird oneself with a sword. And he should do so on his wedding day. V'hadarchat selach rachav al divar emet v'anvat sedek v'torcha noraot yiminecha. Having the word v'hadarcha repeat itself for every attribute in this verse, it reads, and it is a sign of your honor that your victory, that you are a victorious rider. It is a sign of your honor that you speak the truth. It is a sign of your honor that you speak justice with humbleness. It is a sign of your honor that you loose fear from your right hand. The sense of that last attribute is that you shoot arrows in battle with a frightening accuracy, as we will see from the next verse. But before we get there, we should point out that in this verse, much as in the opening verse, it is both the king's physical beauty as well as the graciousness of his words. It is that the king is complete. He is Shalem, Shlomo. He is complete in both body and spirit, which make him the complete hero, the complete ruler. Here we start with his military riding, and then we switch to his ability to rule his people fairly and justly, and then we go back to, again, to his powers in battle. Chitzecha shinunim, amim tachtecha yipalu, belev oyevei hamelech. I'm going to arrange this verse a bit and move up belev oyevei hamelech, because I think that is the accurate translation. Just sometimes in Hebrew you have sentences in poetry chopped up a little bit. Your sharp arrows fall in the hearts of the king's enemies. Beneath you they will fall. Again, what is real and what is metaphor? Is it the king's words which are pointed and piercing, felling his enemies? Or is it actual battle that is being described? Also note that the king is referred to both in the second person, you, chitzecha, but also in third person, bo'yivei hamelech, in the hearts of the kings. Kisacha Elohim olam va'ed shevet mishor shevet malchutecha. Since the plain sense is that we're talking to a blood and flesh king, that we're not talking to God, so the translation really isn't Kisacha Elohim olam, your seat, O God, is forever and ever. According to Rav Sadia Gaon, Kisacha Elohim means that your seat will be established by God forever and ever. Eben Ezra, which is, I think, very nice, says that it means your divine throne, Kisei Elohim Shelcha, your divine throne, since the throne of King Solomon was actually described as such in chapter 29, verse 23 of 1 Chronicles, Divrei Yamim Aleph, that he was sitting on the Kisei Hashem. Getting back to the verse, Shevet Mishor, Shevet Malchutecha, staff of justice is the staff of your kingship. Again, the idea that it's only a just and fair king, a righteous king, who really is good at being able to sit on his throne forever. Ahavta tzedek vatisna resha alkein mishochcha Elohim Elohecha shemen sason mecha veirecha. You love righteousness and you hate injustice. That is why God, your God, has anointed you from amongst all your compatriots with the oil of happiness. Again, this may be biographical, referring to Shlomo being chosen over his brothers, or it may simply be the sense of any king being selected, or it could be messianic, that in the future days, the messianic future king of David will be chosen from all of his brothers because of the fact that he loves righteousness and hates injustice. Mor va'aholot k'tziot kol bigdotecha min hechalei shein mini simechucha. All of your clothes are scented with myrrh and aloe and cassia. Note the similarities to Shir HaShirim, Song of Songs, chapter 4, verses 11 and 12. Cassia, by the way, is a type of cinnamon. From the holes of ivory, Min hechale shein, they entertain you with stringed instruments. Mini, it says, but I'm translating minim, stringed instruments. It seems that this is not merely an adulation of the wealth of the king, but the poet is now describing, that is, the poet is not just saying that the king always, his cloak smells nice and he has a beautiful palace, but he's actually describing now the actual wedding procession and the house of the melech where it was situated. Benot Malachim biyikrotecha nitzva shegal liminecha bechetem ofir. The daughters of kings are amongst your valued ones. Perhaps his existing wives stand in the pews making way for the new wife. The consort stands to your right, adorned with the gold of Ophir. So, is this a literal description, or is it a metaphor that God loves his people and that they stand by his right hand, even though all the nations were created by him, and all the nations are precious as well in their own way? Ophir is the location of Solomon's gold mines, which is mentioned in chapter 9 of the book of Kings 1, and Isaiah, Yeshayahu the prophet, refers to gold of Ophir as highly rare and highly precious. And now, having set up that the consort is standing by the right hand of the king, the poet addresses her directly, or perhaps the king is speaking to her, wooing her, referring to himself in third person. Shim'i vat, ri'i vahati oznech, vishchi amech uveit avich. Hear this, daughter, and see, tune your ears, forget your nation and your father's house. The marriage is clearly a political one, and our daughter, our young princess-to-be, is obviously feeling lonely and cut off from her home and her people. V'yit av ha-melech yofyech ki hu adonayich v'hishtach ha-vilo. And the king will desire your beauty, for he is your master, so bow down to him. Perhaps the sense is that even though the king desires you, you must remember that he is still the king and your master. Or perhaps the sense is that if you accept him as your master, he will desire you. Again, literal, metaphoric, both. Uvat tzor b'mincha fanayich Yichalu Ashireyam. So this seems to be identifying the bride as the daughter of the king of Tyre, Bat Tzor, but probably Bat Melech Tzor. Tyre was an ally kingdom to David and to Solomon, and it's situated in what is now part of modern day Lebanon. So apparently this Bat Tzor, is receiving gifts from the aristocracy of Israel. Now our Tanakh, our Bible, never mentions that either David nor Solomon married a daughter of Hiram, the king of Tyre. But as I've mentioned before, the Bible is not a history book, and not every event is covered, and it seems actually quite likely that there was a marriage between the two nations. On the other hand, this may not be spoken directly to the daughter of Tzor. It may be referring to the citizens of Tzor, and that they, along with the aristocrats of Israel, will bring gifts before you, in which case this you might be the Queen of Sheba, who had some kind of dalliance in relationship with Shlomo, although it's very briefly described in the book of Malachim. There are very many extra-biblical literatures about the relationship that they had. And this latter approach could match the geopolitical tension that is hinted at in chapters 9, 10, and 11 of the Book of Kings. Solomon had a very reliable ally in Hiram, the king of Tyre, and the two kingdoms became very intermingled. But when the queen of Sheba, the queen of Sheba, comes into the picture, there's a great deal of strain put on the Lebanon-Israel relationship, and that relationship is sort of shunted into second place as the African-Israel relationship comes preeminent. Kol kvuda vat melech pnima mimishbitzot zahav levusha. Let all the valuables of the princess, i.e. those presents that were bought by the aristocracy, as described in the previous verse, let all of those valuables come inside, that is, as part of the procession. Her dress, i.e. her wedding dress, is woven, mimishbitzot zahav, is woven in gold. The rabbis see this as a metaphor that it is through the internal majesty, kvuda pnima, of the Jewish people that God will bring the messianic times and the future messianic kings. And as I said, like the Song of Songs, these inspired poems work on multiple levels. But in the plain sense, the singer is simply singing that all of these gifts should now be brought inside as part of the wedding procession. Lir kamot tuval lamelech bitulot achareha reoteha muvaot lach. with embroidery. She is led to the king, her maidens after her. Her companions are brought before you. The wedding procession continues. Tuvalna bismachot vagil tivoenna beheichal melech. They are all led in with happiness and joy. In this way, they enter the palace of the king. Speaking again towards the new, to the new bride, tachat avotecha yiyuvanecha tishitemo lissarim b'chol ha'aretz. In place of your father, i.e. the loss of your home and your people, will be your sons, that is the sons that you'll have with this king. They will be placed as officers in every land. And I'm translating kol ha'aretz as every land and not in the whole land, since the whole point of their marriage is to create an international order by combining these two nations via marriage. And now in the final verse, it seems that the royal poet references himself and speaks in first person. Azkira shimcha b'chol dor v'dor, alkein amim yehoducha le'olam va'ed. Let me recall your name in every generation and generation. It is because of all of this that they will praise you forever and ever. As I mentioned, it's not clear here who the king is. It's not clear who the bride is. Or if it was meant to be used over and over, considering the amount the bride Solomon took, perhaps it was written for multiple use. It's not clear if there is a metaphoric level, or if there is, how to interpret the more metaphoric level. The bottom line is it's a difficult psalm, so perhaps the best thing is just to sit back and enjoy the plain sense of a royal wedding procession, this beautiful, glorious king who fights in battle and is a great judge and caring ruler of his people, his nervous bride at his side, a massive procession, gifts, unending gifts in number, and finally they are married.